You know, 9 out of 10 of the AI coding tools that you use every single day, I mean, we're talking about Cursor, Claude Code, GitHub Copilot, AiderDAP, they actually do not use the complex orchestration frameworks that everyone is currently trying to sell you.
No, they really don't. They run on, well, basically a custom, roughly 9-line while loop.
Which is just wild to think about.
It is. And today we are going to tear down exactly how they do it, why they do it, and, why the standard advice you're hearing about building AI applications is essentially backward at this point.
Welcome to the deep dive. And if you're listening to this, I am talking directly to you. You are a developer. You might live in the front end wrestling with state management all day, or maybe you're deep in the back end optimizing database queries.
Right.
Either way, you use tools like Claude Code or Cursor or ChatGPT on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And you've probably experienced that initial magic, right? Where you type a prompt and a fully functional React component or like a Python microservice just magically materializes in your editor.
Yeah, that aha moment.
Exactly. But you want to know what is actually happening under the hood.
Because, I mean, the gap between being a power user of these AI harnesses and being a system architect who can actually build them from scratch, it's massive. It's literally the difference between knowing how to drive a car and knowing how to rebuild the entire transmission.
Yeah. And you are looking to level up. So maybe you have a high-level system design interview coming up, or maybe your engineering manager just tasked you with building an internal AI tool for your company. And you're probably currently staring at this massive wall of buzzwords, right? Like agents, DGs, React prompting tools, MCP.
It's a lot. It is a completely overwhelming ecosystem right now.
It really is. Well, we are going to clear the fog today. We are diving into two highly technical, absolutely fascinating sources from the 2025-2026 enterprise landscape. The first one is a comprehensive taxonomy, re-A-N-E, that basically maps out this incredibly confusing agent framework ecosystem.
Yeah, it acts as sort of a survival guide for developers, really organizing the chaos of the current market. And then the second source is a deep architectural analysis of autonomous AI agents operating in strict enterprise production environments.
So we are looking at the real-world battle scars of deploying this technology at scale, not just weekend projects.
Exactly. Production realities.
So our mission for this deep dive is to completely deconstruct the internals, the design patterns, and the exact techniques of agentic coding. We want to move you past being a mere consumer of these tools.
Right. By the end of our time together today, you are going to understand the exact architecture, the latency math of prefill versus decode, which is crucial, the mechanics of context engineering, and the fundamental why behind the code executing on your machine.
We are moving from the illusion of magic to the absolute reality of mechanics. So, okay, let's unpack this. To understand where we are right now, we kind of have to establish how dramatically the foundation has shifted over the last year.
Yeah, we need to look at the architectural transition from what the industry called the wrapper era into the era of compound AI systems, because that transition is the key to everything we are going to discuss today.
Great.
If we rewind to, say, 2024, the market was just flooded with wrapper applications. And from an engineering standpoint, these were incredibly simple.
Oh, yeah, just a UI over an API call.
Exactly. You had a basic user interface, a really thin layer of backend code, maybe a simple Express server or like a Python script, and it just wrapped a single API call to a large language model. You sent a string of text, you waited, and you received a string of text back.
It was essentially stateless translation. Like you give it an input, it gives you an output, and then it just forgets you immediately.
Precisely. The system itself possesses zero intelligence. All the thinking was bottlenecked by a single monolithic inference call. But, as we move through 2025 and into 2026, the flagship models, so the GPT-5 class, Llama 4, the Claude 3.5, and 4 families, they hit this massive generative inflection point.
They got so much smarter.
They became so capable of internalizing complex reasoning and native tool use that the surrounding architecture actually had to evolve just to keep up with them. We moved to compound AI systems.
Meaning the application is no longer just like a megaphone for an LLM, it's a cohesive engine.
Right. A compound system integrates multi-step reasoning, persistent state management, long-term memory retrieval, multi-tool orchestration. These systems handle long-running asynchronous jobs. They don't just answer a single question anymore.
Right, they go out into a file system, they read logs, execute code, evaluate the output, and then iterate on their own.
Exactly. And to wrap our heads around how these compound systems are structured, the taxonomy source provides this brilliant mental model. It breaks the entire agent ecosystem down into a four-layer stack.
And if you are a web developer listening to this, this is going to sound incredibly familiar. So let's walk through these four layers.
Okay, so at the foundation, layer one, you have the model APIs. This is the raw inference engine. OpenAI, Anthropic, Google Vertex, or maybe, you know, a local Llama instance on your machine.
Just the bare metal of AI.
Yeah. You are sending raw HTTP requests containing messages and receiving completions. You are handling the raw JSON payloads of tool calls yourself.
So think of layer one as your raw TCP IP or your fundamental HTTP protocol.
Yeah.
It is the absolute physics of the network. I mean, you could build a web app using raw TCP sockets, but you probably don't want to.
Definitely not. Which brings us to layer two, which is the protocols. And this is where the 2026 landscape gets incredibly interesting. Protocols are the standardized communication channels that sit just above the raw APIs.
Right, the glue.
Yeah, and the two dominant forces here are MCP, the Model Context Protocol, and A2A. MCP standardizes exactly how an agent talks to an external tool, whether that tool is a Postgres database, a weather API, or your local file system.
And then A2A standardizes how different agents actually talk to each other.
Exactly. So sitting above those protocols, we reach layer three, which is frameworks. This is the orchestration logic. This is where you find the names that constantly dominate hacker news, right? LangGraph, CrewAI, Autogen.
Yeah, heavy lifters.
Yeah. They provide opinionated structures for multi-agent coordination, memory persistence, and execution tracing.
And then finally, layer four is harnesses. So these are the finished products, the complete polished tools that you actually use daily, like Claude Code, Cursor, Aider, or Devin. They combine all the underlying patterns into a dense, production-ready application that solves a very specific user problem.
Right.
So continuing that web dev analogy, if layer one is TCP/IP, then layer three, the frameworks, is basically your Next.js, your Express, or your Django. It is the opinionated architecture that organizes the physics. And layer four, the harness, is the final sauce product you subscribe to, like a Figma or Shopify.
That analogy holds up perfectly, especially when we look at the most critical insight that these sources reveal about the stack. The industry marketing really implies that you must adopt the entire stack sequentially. Layer one, then two, then three, then four.
Yeah, that's what you'd assume.
But the reality is entirely different. You do not actually need every layer to build a production-grade system.
Now, that feels super counterintuitive to me, because if I'm building a modern web app, I am absolutely using a framework like React or Next.js.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not writing raw vanilla JavaScript DOM manipulations unless I'm like a total masochist. So why is the AI agent space different?
Because the bottleneck has moved. The bottleneck to agentic utility is no longer the underlying intelligence of the model. Like we said, the models are exceptionally capable now. The new bottleneck is orchestration robustness and operational stability.
Okay, so what does that mean in practice?
The biggest revelation we are going to unpack today is that many of the most successful production agents bypass layer three entirely. They go straight from layer one and two, the APIs and protocols, directly to layer four. They skip the orchestration framework completely.
They just bypass the Next.js of agents and build custom logic directly over the protocols. I mean, that's a massive architectural claim. And we're going to dig deeply into the engineering reasons why the pros do this in just a few minutes.
It's fascinating.
It really is.
Yeah.
But before we deconstruct the concept of frameworks, we do have to look at what is currently dominating the market. Because your engineering lead is inevitably going to ask you tomorrow, hey, should we adopt LangGraph or Pedantic AI for this new microservice? And you need the vocabulary to actually answer that intelligently.
Absolutely. We need to define the spectrum. The taxonomy source makes this excellent point. Lumping all of these tools under the single word framework creates immense confusion for developers.
Right.
A library that just formats JSON strings is not the same thing as a distributed state machine, yet they both get called agent frameworks on Twitter. To clarify this, the sources categorize the market along a thin to thick spectrum.
It's all about architectural control. How much of the execution loop does the framework actually own versus how much do you, the developer, own?
So let's start on the thin side of the spectrum, the thin toolkits. These are built for developers who demand maximum transparency and execution speed. Right. The major players here are the Vercel AI SDK and Pydantic AI. Thin toolkits should really be thought of as utility functions rather than overarching architectures. They solve the really tedious plumbing problems that every developer hates writing from scratch.
Like provider abstraction, right?
Exactly. Provider abstraction is a great example. If you write an agent using the OpenAI API, and tomorrow your company signs a huge enterprise deal with Google, Rewriting all your payload structures for Gemini is a total nightmare.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. Thin toolkits abstract that away with a unified interface. They also handle the complexities of streaming responses and type safety, but crucially, they do not dictate your control flow. They stay out of your way.
They just give you the tools and let you build the house.
Right.
I just want to highlight Pydantic AI specifically here because the source text singles it out for bringing a fast API feeling to agent development. And for our Python developers listening, you know exactly how elegant Fast API feels.
Oh, it's so clean. And Pydantic AI is built by the same team that maintains the core Pydantic library, so they lean heavily into Python native patterns. And the defining feature they introduced to the agent space here is robust dependency injection.
Yes. Let's talk about testing for a second, because if you've ever tried to write a unit test for an autonomous AI agent, you know it is pure misery.
It's awful.
It's usually this tangled, stateful web of global variables and mock network requests that just flake constantly.
Right, because traditional agent scripts tightly couple the tool execution to the environment. Pydantic AI solves this by dynamically injecting dependencies into the tools at runtime.
So how does that work in practice?
Well, if your agent has a tool that queries a database, you don't hard code the production database connection string inside the tool, you inject it. This means during a test run in your CI pipeline, you can seamlessly inject a mock database or a local SQI instance without changing a single line of the agent's core logic.
That is so smart. It makes the tools genuinely deterministically testable.
Exactly. And it pairs that testability with output validation that actively self-corrects. This was one of those mechanics that just made so much sense when I read it in the source.
Yeah, it addresses the silent failure problem. Because in a naive implementation, if an LLM outputs malformed JSON, say it forgets a closing bracket or passes a string instead of an integer, the JSON parser throws an exception and the entire agent just crashes.
Right. Standard brittle code. But Pydantic AI enforces strict schemas. If the model generates an output that violates the Pydantic schema, the framework catches the validation error. But instead of crashing, it automatically serializes that specific error message, feeds it back to the LLM as a new user prompt, and essentially says, hey, you violated the schema on line 4. Please retry and fix this.
It turns validation from a failure state into a core recovery primitive that is massive for production reliability. So that represents the thin side of the spectrum. High control, high transparency, you debug your own loops. Now let's slide to the complete opposite end, the thick orchestrators.
The heavyweights.
Exactly. This is where you sacrifice transparency in exchange for massive pre-built infrastructure.
And the undisputed heavyweight champion in this category right now is LangGraph.
LangGraph takes a deeply opinionated approach. It models the entire agent workflow as directed cyclic graphs, DAGs with loops. Nodes represent computation steps or agent actions, and edges represent the control flow routing. But why does modeling an agent as a graph matter so much for enterprise systems?
It comes down to state management and persistence. In complex enterprise environments, you are dealing with workflows that might take hours or even days to complete.
Wow, days.
Oh, yeah. Imagine an agent tasked with migrating a legacy database schema. It reads the schema, writes migration scripts, runs them in a staging environment, waits for a massive test suite to pass. If the server running that agent reboots at hour 2, a simple while loop script loses everything in memory. You have to start completely over.
Right, which costs a fortune in API calls.
Exactly. LangGraph provides low-level infrastructure for checkpointer state. It serializes and saves the state dictionary at every single node boundary, usually pushing it to a Postgres or Redis backend.
So if the server dies, when it spins back up, the graph runner pulls the last valid state dictionary and resumes exactly where it left off.
Precisely. And that architecture enables what they refer to as time travel debugging. Because the state is immutably saved at every step of the graph, a developer can visually step backward through the agent's execution history.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you can inspect the exact payload that existed at node 3, realize the LLM made a poor decision, manually modify the state payload yourself, and then resume the graph's execution from that modified point.
That sounds incredibly powerful, especially when you factor in the cyclic nature of the graphs. Like, you can build persistent loops where an agent writes code, an execution node runs it, it fails, and the edge routes the error log back to the writing node automatically. It's an industrial-grade machine.
It is.
But then we look at the other thick frameworks, and they take a totally different philosophical approach. Let's look at Crew AI.
Right. Crew AI completely abandons the graph metaphor in favor of a sociological metaphor. It is role-based orchestration.
You literally define a crew. You can fix one agent with the role of senior React developer. You configure another as a QA automation tester. And maybe you instantiate a project manager agent to oversee them. You write out these deep backstories, goals, and motivations for each one. It literally mimics human corporate structures.
And it has seen massive adoption because it is incredibly intuitive for non-technical stakeholders to grasp. A product manager can map out an entire multi-agent system on a whiteboard using human organizational charts and translate that directly into code very quickly.
I have to admit, I struggle with this one. When I read the source's critique of the role-based approach, it articulated exactly what I've always suspected about this pattern. Like, are we just dressing up prompt engineering as system architecture?
That's the big question.
If I assign a manager persona with a rich backstory about how much they value clean code, does that actually make the underlying neural network smarter? Or is it just a massive crutch?
That is the fundamental critique of the role-based pattern. The sources warn that it can deeply mislead developers about what is actually happening at the hardware level. An LLM does not possess a manager persona. It does not have feelings about clean code.
It's just predicting tokens.
Exactly. What Crew AI is doing is simply injecting massive blocks of text into the system prompt behind the scenes. And when you utilize their hierarchical mode, the framework auto-generates a manager agent to delegate tasks to the worker agents. But mathematically, every single delegation is an extra, highly expensive API call.
It's masking inefficient system design behind a cute corporate metaphor.
Exactly. You are paying a heavy latency and token cost to maintain the illusion of a human team. It's incredibly fast to prototype, but that abstraction can become a prison when you move to production and need fine-grained control over your execution latency and your context window.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
You trade architectural control for developer experience. Now, speaking of developer experience, there is one more thick framework mentioned, Mastra. They bill themselves as the Next.js of agents.
Right.
It is a TypeScript-first, batteries-completely-included framework. It ships with workflows, RAG integrations, memory modules, evaluation tools out of the box. If you want a single monolithic dependency for your entire AI stack and you agree with their specific engineering opinions, it is a powerhouse.
But that is the operative phrase. If you agree with their opinions, you are locked into their specific implementations of state and memory.
Now, separate from the thin versus thick community frameworks, the taxonomy source outlines a distinct third category. Vendor SDKs. These are the frameworks built and maintained by the foundational model providers themselves.
And their architectural choices reveal a lot about their corporate strategies. For instance, look at the Claude Agent SDK released by Anthropic. It is not a minimal tool. It is essentially a massive, thick runtime environment. Yeah. It doesn't just give you an API interface, it literally ships the core logic of the Claude Code CLI tool under the hood. It comes bundled with complex, highly privileged tools like bash execution and file system manipulation out of the box.
Why would Anthropic ship such a heavy runtime instead of just a clean, simple library?
Because Anthropic's brand is built entirely on safety and reliability. By controlling the execution runtime, they can enforce strict guardrails, manage exactly how context is parsed, and ensure that their highly capable models aren't hallucinating destructive bash commands like R and RF. They want to control the environment to guarantee the user experience.
That makes perfect sense. Contrast that with the OpenAI Agents SDK, which just dropped as the successor to their experimental Swarm library. The OpenAI SDK is completely minimal. It is a very thin orchestrator. It provides an agent loop, a mechanism to hand off control between agents, and some basic guardrails. That is it. You have to write and inject all of your own tool implementations.
OpenAI's strategy is to position themselves as the underlying primitive. They want their API to be the raw utility, and they are leaving all the complex tool integrations up to the developer.
And then you have Google's ADK, the Agent Development Kit, which might be the most ambitious of the vendor tools. It natively supports Python, TypeScript, Go, and Java right out of the gate. And it introduces hierarchical workflow agents as first-class primitives deeply tied into their Vertex AI cloud infrastructure.
They are clearly targeting enterprise Java and Go shops with that one.
Oh, for sure. So we have this massive sprawling ecosystem. Thin toolkits, thick graph orchestrators, role-playing crews, and vendor-specific runtimes. It feels like an absolute explosion of tooling.
It does. It feels like you must choose one of these paths to survive. But this is where the narrative of the sources takes a massive structural turn. If standard protocols are making custom framework integrations obsolete, it begs the question, what is actually powering the top-tier tools?
This is the phenomenon the sources refer to as the protocol squeeze. The core argument is that despite all the marketing and the proliferation of libraries, the orchestration frameworks, that entire middle layer three we just spent all this time dissecting, are actively shrinking in relevance. They're being squeezed out of the stack.
Exactly.
But why? Because of standardized protocols. Let's look at history for a second. Why did frameworks like LangChain or CrewAI become so dominant in the first place? It was because they provided custom connector code.
Right.
If you were building an agent in early 2024 and you wanted it to query a Postgres database, you needed a custom integration. If you wanted to search GitHub or read a Jira ticket, you had to write a bespoke wrapper. Or you used a framework that had already written it for you. Frameworks justified their heavy footprints by offering a massive library of tool integrations.
But then the Model Context Protocol, MCP, was introduced. And MCP fundamentally commoditized tool integration overnight. It created one universal open source interface for tools operating over standard JSON RPC.
It's brilliant.
It really is. Suddenly, there are tens of thousands of open source MCP servers available. If you have an agent that speaks the MCP protocol, it can instantly connect to an MCP compatible Postgres server, a Jira server, or a GitHub server. You no longer need a heavy framework to provide a custom connector. You just plug in the standard protocol.
And we are seeing the exact same commoditization happen to agent-to-agent communication with the A2A protocol. You used to need a complex multi-agent framework just to pass a message between two different LLMs reliably. Now they just speak standard A2A.
So if the protocols are handling all the tool integration and all of the network communication, what actual responsibility is left for the frameworks to handle?
Pure orchestration logic, the while loop.
Precisely. And that logic, the actual routing of information, is something developers are rapidly realizing they can just write themselves. The floor of the technologies has risen. If you combine raw APIs from layer one with standard protocols from layer two, you have 90% of what a framework provides without any of the architectural lock-in.
And if you need a cautionary tale about the sheer danger of framework lock-in, the taxonomy source outlines the absolute disaster that was the AutoGen lifecycle.
Mm-hmm.
I want to walk through this timeline because it perfectly illustrates the pain of marrying a heavy abstraction. If you've ever had to migrate a massive code base because a core library got deprecated, you will feel this in your bones.
It is a sobering timeline for any engineering manager making architectural bets right now.
Okay, so the story starts with the original AutoGen, version 0.2. It was built by Microsoft Research. It was this conversation-driven, multi-agent framework. It was wildly popular. Developers loved it. Tutorials were everywhere on YouTube. And enterprise teams built massive production systems on top of it. Then in September 2024, the original creators of AutoGen leave Microsoft.
A classic tech industry exodus.
Exactly. So in November 2024, two things happened simultaneously, creating an absolute nightmare scenario for developers. The departing team creates a fork of the project called AG2. They maintain control of the original PyPI package name, and crucially, they make it backward compatible with the old code. But at the exact same time, Microsoft releases AutoGen version 0.4. And version 0.4 is a complete, fundamental architectural rewrite from the ground up. It has a totally different API surface.
So immediately, overnight, the community and the documentation are fractured in half.
But it gets worse. Fast forward to October 2025, Microsoft makes another announcement. They announced the Microsoft Agent Framework. They have decided to merge the new AutoGen 0.4 with Semantic Kernel, meaning AutoGen 0.4, the massive rewrite they just forced everyone to look at, is effectively entering maintenance mode less than a year later.
If you were a developer who adopted AutoGen in early 2024 to build your company's core infrastructure, where does that leave you?
Nowhere good.
You face a completely fragmented open source community, absolutely unclear migration paths, and your foundational architecture is now effectively legacy code. You are stranded on an island that is actively sinking.
It is brutal.
But it highlights the core risk perfectly.
Right.
When you adopt a heavy orchestration framework, you have to understand that you aren't just importing an API. You are marrying a specific development team's roadmap. You are tying your production code to their internal corporate politics and funding cycles.
Mm-hmm.
If they fragment or pivot or rewrite their core primitives, your production code breaks. It forces developers to ask, should you rely on deep structural abstractions that you do not control?
And that question leads us directly to the most explosive, uncomfortable truth in this entire deep dive. The data that the framework ecosystem really doesn't want broadcasted. If standard protocols are making custom framework integrations obsolete, What is actually powering the top-tier tools?
The sources reveal a staggering statistic. 9 out of 10 major coding agent harnesses the tools setting the standard for the entire industry, like Claude Code, Aider, Codex CLI, Cursor, Devon. 9 out of 10 of them do not use orchestration frameworks.
Crap.
They do not use LangGraph. They do not use Crew AI.
The one exception the sources note is GitHub Copilot, which uses Microsoft's internal agent framework, largely due to corporate ecosystem alignment, obviously. But the rest of the cutting-edge tools, they are entirely custom-built.
So the obvious question is, if they aren't using frameworks, what is orchestrating the logic? How do you build a system as complex as Claude Code without a framework?
Right.
You use a custom loop. At its absolute core, the canonical agent architecture is an approximately 9-line-while true loop.
I remember reading that and thinking, 9 lines of code? Are you serious?
But conceptually, yes. It boils down to a very simple state machine. You initialize an array to hold the conversation history. You enter a while true loop. Inside that loop, you send the history array to the LLM. The LLM processes it and returns a response. You evaluate that response.
Okay, so just basic conditional logic.
Exactly. If the response is a final text answer for the user, you yield it and break the loop. If the response is a tool call, say, the LLM wants to run a bash command to grep a fileware. You execute that tool locally, append the result of that execution to the history array, and the loop continues. That is the fundamental engine. That is what powers Aider and Claude Code.
So they might import a thin toolkit like LetLM or the Vercel AI SDK just to handle the routing and the specific API quirks of different providers.
Mm.
But the actual orchestration, the brain of the agent, is just raw custom code written by the developers.
Exactly. And the sources identify 3 primary reasons why elite engineering teams choose this path: performance, control, and simplicity.
Performance is always king. Let's talk about latency.
Every single layer of abstraction you add to a system introduces computational overhead. The serialization of data, the deserialization, the state checks within a heavy framework like LangGraph, it all takes milliseconds.
And those add up fast.
Custom bare metal agents report up to 30% faster response times than their framework-based equivalents. In a coding agent that might be making hundreds of automated tool calls in a single minute to debug a test suite, a 40% latency reduction is the difference between an interactive, fluid tool and a sluggish, unusable nightmare.
And the control aspect makes perfect sense, too. If you are building a tool like Aider, you need deeply custom file editing strategies. You need highly specific context window management and complex permission models for interacting with the user's file system safely.
Right. Frameworks force you to conform your problem to their predefined way of thinking. One developer quoted in the source text literally said, "Building custom solutions took roughly the same time as debugging framework issues, but I actually understood what I built."
That is the crux of software engineering right there.
Mm-hmm.
Code you write is code you understand. Code you import is a black box you hope works. But, you know, I always assumed the secret sauce to these agents was a massive, incredibly complex system prompt dictating its persona and rules.
That's what the industry assumes. But the BrainTrust data completely invokes that assumption. BrainTrust analyzed thousands of real production-grade agents to see what was actually consuming the tokens inside the LLM's context window.
Right. And you would think, with all this talk about personas and complex graph logic, the system prompts would be dominating the context. But they aren't. The data shows system prompts only account for 3.4% of the tokens. Tool definitions take up about 10.7%. The massive chunk, nearly 70% of the entire conversation context, is entirely tool responses.
67.6%, to be exact. Tool responses represent the vast majority of the workload the agent processes. The real leverage, the actual secret to making an agent smart, is not complex orchestration logic. It is context engineering.
Or text engineering.
Yes. It is about the quality and density of the data you feed back into the prompt via tools, not how many cyclical graphs you draw. If your database tool returns a massive unformatted JSON dump, it chokes the context window and the agent hallucinates. If your tool returns a cleanly formatted parse summary, the agent succeeds.
Vercel proved this concept dramatically with what they called their D0 experiment. This is one of my favorite anecdotes from the sources. Vercel had this internal, highly complex agent operating with over 15 highly specialized tools.
Wow, 15!
Yeah, they had a specific tool to read files, specific tool to search the web, a specific tool to run linter scripts. It was a massive orchestration effort. And they decided to run an experiment to strip it all down. They removed 80% of those specialized tools.
Okay.
They replaced them with one single generic bashed sandbox tool. They essentially stripped away the framework and said to the LLM, We aren't going to hold your hand with 15 specific buttons. Here's a Linux terminal. Figure it out.
And the results were staggering.
It was 3.5 times faster,
yeah.
And the success rate on their benchmark tasks jumped from 80% to 100%.
Because simplification wins. By removing the complex, opinionated tool routing and relying instead on the foundational model's native training, its deep understanding of standard environments like Bash of them, they drastically reduce the orchestration overhead. They remove the opportunity for the framework to misinterpret or misroute the model's intent.
But if we look at the math, it's not just about stripping away tools. It's about how you structurally format the model's thinking process.
Okay.
The AgentArch benchmark data in the second source dives deep into this.
Yeah.
They ran extensive comparisons between React prompting and strict function calling in multi-agent enterprise systems.
This is a critical technical distinction. For our listeners, React, which stands for Reason and Act, is a ubiquitous prompting strategy. It asks the model to output a textual thought, then define an action, and then it waits for an observation.
Right.
It forces the model to externalize its reasoning process in plain text before taking a mechanical step.
It sounds completely logical. You want the model to show its work so you can debug its logic. But the benchmark data absolutely destroys it. React prompting consistently underperforms, and more importantly, it hallucinates at a massively higher rate compared to strict function calling.
And we need to understand mechanically why that failure happens. When you use React, you are relying on unstructured text generation to manage your system's control flow.
Okay, break that down for me.
The framework has to use regular expressions to parse the model's text output to find the action. The model might write a brilliant, insightful thought paragraph, but then it might format the action string slightly wrong, or it might hallucinate a parameter because it got caught up in its own linguistic narrative.
Oxy.
In a multi-agent system where agents might pass data back and forth 50 or 100 times, that tiny textual variance compounds. It leads to a massive cascading systemic failure.
Strict function calling, on the other hand, operates at a different level entirely.
Exactly. Modern foundational models are explicitly fine-tuned on JSON schema adherence. When you use strict function calling, you constrain the output space at the inference level. The model isn't writing a free-form monologue. It is mathematically populating a structured JSON payload.
Which is much safer.
The AgentArch data proves conclusively that this structured, constrained output reduces hallucination rates dramatically in complex, multi-step tasks.
So if Anthropic is literally shipping direct APIs with Bash access, and Vercel is proving that fewer tools and simpler while loops win, and benchmark data is telling us to avoid unstructured React text parsing, Maybe the best framework for your next backend project or that big system design interview isn't LangGraph or Crew AI.
Right.
Maybe the architecture you should be pitching is just raw code, robust tools, and deep, rigorous context engineering.
It demands that developers shift their focus. You must understand how to engineer the context window rather than just wiring up conceptual nodes in a graph. Which brings us perfectly to how these engineer principles are applied in the tools we actually use.
Exactly. Let's take all this theory, the custom while loops, the context engineering, the tool execution, and look under the hood of the coding harnesses you are probably running right now. How do Cursor, Devin, and Ader actually manage this massive amount of context without blowing up the token limit and costing you a fortune?
The architectural analysis in the sources draws a very clear line in the sand between two fundamental philosophical approaches to building a coding agent, the IDE native approach versus the autonomous approach.
Let's start with IDE native. Cursor is the prime example, built as a direct fork of VS Code. The philosophy driving Cursor is what the industry refers to as cognitive proximity.
Cognitive proximity is a vital design concept. It means keeping the artificial reasoning process as physically and mentally close to the human developer as possible. Cursor is not designed to replace the developer. It is designed to augment them at the exact point of execution. You stay natively in the loop. You are continuously adjusting the steering wheel.
Right. You highlight a specific block of code. You hit command K. You ask for a localized change. You see the diff immediately in line. And you accept or reject it. The trust in the system is built through continuous exposure and microfeedback loops. You never feel like the agent is running off into the woods, out of sight, to burn down your repository.
Contrast that architecture with the autonomous approach, exemplified by tools like Devin and OpenHands, which utilize variations of the Kodact architecture.
These are marketed as AI-native engineering teams, not just autocomplete on steroids.
Exactly. They operate on a fundamentally different premise. They move the cognitive load into the agent itself. Devin operates inside a secure, disposable Docker sandbox, completely isolated from your local machine state.
So it's walled off?
Yeah. You give it a high-level abstract task, migrate this backend database from SQLite to Postgres and update the ORM. And it goes to work autonomously. It runs shell commands, it resolves its own package dependencies, it reads the error logs, it iterates. It only pings you, the human, for predefined checkpoints, like approving a migration plan or reviewing a final pull request.
It's the difference between having a really smart co-pilot in the passenger seat, actively pointing things out, versus sending a contractor to a different building to do a job and waiting for them to email you the invoice.
That's a great way to put it.
But whether you are building an IDE native tool like Cursor or a sandboxed autonomous tool like Devin, both architectures slam into the exact same physical limitation, the context window.
Code bases are massive. Even with modern models supporting a 200,000 token context window, you cannot just indiscriminately dump an entire enterprise monorepo into the prompt.
Why not?
First, it is exorbitantly expensive. Second, the prefill latency would be measured in minutes. And third, the model will inevitably suffer from the lost-in-the-middle phenomenon, where its attention mechanism degrades and it just forgets the code located in the center of the massive prompt.
I get how it strips out the implementation, but I'm stuck on how it knows which skeleton files to pull. If I have a massive repo, my token count is still going to explode, even if it's just the skeleton. How do you solve the context problem without a heavy framework managing vector embeddings?
You use intelligent structural retrieval. And the most elegant solution discussed in the sources is the concept of repository maps, which was heavily pioneered by the open source CLI tool Aider.
The magic of repo maps. I want to spend significant time on this because if you can explain this mechanism in an interview, you are going to look like an absolute rock star. How does a tool like Aider look at a 10,000 file code base and know exactly which three files to edit without reading all 10,000 files into the prompt?
It uses abstract syntax trees, specifically leveraging a tool called TreeSitter.
Okay, walk us through the mechanics of that for the backend devs who might not write compilers every day.
Sure. Traditional RG retrieval augmented generation treats code as plain semantic text. It chunks it up and puts it in a vector database. But code isn't just text. It has rigorous structure. TreeSitter parses the code into a tree data structure that inherently understands the syntax of the programming language.
So it maps the logic.
Exactly. It knows exactly what a class definition is. It knows the parameters of a function signature. It knows the variable declarations. Aider runs TreeSitter over your entire repository locally to extract only the structural metadata. It strips out all the implementation details, the bodies of the functions, the comments, the internal while loops.
It just grabs the architectural skeleton of the code.
Exactly. It creates a highly compressed text map of your code base, showing just the classes, the methods, and how they relate to each other globally. But to your earlier point, even that compressed map can be too large for a massive enterprise repo. So Aider applies a mathematical graph ranking algorithm, conceptually very similar to Google's original PageRank algorithm.
PageRank applied to source code. That is brilliant.
Yes. The nodes in the graph are the files or classes, and the edges are the imports and function calls. When you ask Aider a question, say, add a timeout to the main database connection, it uses the graph ranking algorithm to find the most mathematically relevant nodes in that skeleton map based on your prompt. It identifies the database manager class and the connect method as highly relevant nodes.
And then, and only then, does it go to the file system, grab the full raw source code for just those specific highly ranked files, and injects that raw code into the context window alongside the compressed map of the rest of the repo.
The efficiency gains are staggering. The sources note that this repo map technique can reduce token usage by up to 98%.
98%. You get the accuracy and global awareness of a full code base search, but with a fraction of the token cost and a fraction of the prefill latency.
And it highlights a critical shift in how we build AI tools. We are moving away from text-based logic and toward execution-based logic. The source points to Smologence as another example, which leans into a code-centric rather than JSON-centric approach.
Right. Smologence solved logic problems by generating and executing raw Python code locally, rather than spitting out structured JSON tool calls for the framework to parse. The data shows this code-centric approach results in 30% fewer iterative steps to solve complex logic problems.
Because programming languages are a vastly more expressive, dense medium for logic than JSON. If an agent needs to filter a list of 1,000 items, emitting a JSON tool call for every single item is terribly inefficient. Writing a 3-line Python list comprehension and executing it in a secure sandbox is vastly superior and less prone to hallucination.
So connecting this back directly to you, the listener, if you are building a backend RGE system right now and you are just chunking text documents and shoving them into a vector database stop and evaluate your architecture.
Yeah, reconsider that.
Look at how Ader uses TreeSitter to build structural maps. Look at how Smallagence uses sandbox code execution. If you can implement a structural graph ranking retrieval system instead of relying on generic semantic vector search, you are operating at the absolute cutting edge of 2026 system architecture.
You're moving from being a passive user of the technology to an engineer who actively controls the context window.
Exactly. But, as any senior engineer knows, making a script work on your laptop on a Friday afternoon is a very different beast from making it work in enterprise production on a Tuesday morning when user traffic spikes and the database slows down.
Oh, totally different worlds.
Which brings us to the harsh realities of deployment. The sandcastle problem, latency math, and the cost of reasoning.
This is where we bridge the gap between a weekend prototype and an enterprise-grade distributed system.
Why do these autonomous agents seem to work flawlessly on day one and then completely fall apart on day three?
The practitioners cited in the source materials refer to this phenomenon as the sandcastle problem. You build this beautiful, complex, multi-agent structure. It looks incredible in your terminal, but it is built on shifting sand. When the tide comes in, meaning real-world, unpredictable, messy data, the structure collapses.
And the root cause they identify isn't that the LLM suddenly got dumber overnight. It's a structural failure they call missing contracts and state drift.
Let's unpack the concept of missing contracts. In traditional software engineering, you have strict API contracts. Function A expects an integer. If you pass it a string, it throws a type error immediately and execution halts.
Right, it's deterministic.
But AI agents communicate in natural language and fuzzy logic. If an agent's internal state expects data in a specific format, and the LLM slightly deviates from that format, the system doesn't necessarily throw a hard error. It fails silently. The agent just makes a weird, logically incorrect decision based on that malformed state and keeps running the loop.
Silent failures are the absolute bane of distributed systems.
And how do developers typically react to these silent failures when building agents? They tweak the system prompt.
Oh, guilty. I can't tell you how many times I've typed, please, I really, really need you to format this output correctly.
We all have. But prompt tweaking is just masking a fundamental structural issue. The sources emphasize that reliability in production requires strict structural guarantees. It requires idempotent operations.
Idempotency. For the front-end devs listening, that means no matter how many times an operation runs, the result is the exact same, and it doesn't corrupt the underlying state.
Precisely. If an agent is updating a production database and the server crashes halfway through the operation, you cannot be left with a corrupted half-state. You need mechanical mechanisms for state rollbacks. You need to treat your agent not as a magical text generation box, but as a node in a distributed system that requires strict input-output validation. If the tool interaction isn't deterministic, your sandcastle will inevitably wash away.
Okay, so that addresses the stability side of production. But what about the speed? Because if your internal agent takes 45 seconds to respond to a user query, your users are going to close the tab and go back to doing it manually.
We have to talk about the latency math, the breakdown of prefill versus decode. This is backend optimization 101 for the AI era, and every developer needs to know this math.
It is the single most critical equation for both the economic viability and performance of an AI application. LLM latency is fundamentally composed of two distinct phases, the prefill phase and the decode phase.
Because it's autoregressive, it's structurally bottlenecked by sequential token generation. You can't parallelize the decode phase the way you can the prefill matrix multiplications. Walk us through how that actually impacts the hardware.
Let's start with the prefill phase. This is the input processing phase. It is when the model reads your prompt in your context window. Because of the architecture of transformers, this phase is highly parallelized across the GPU cores. The model can process thousands of tokens of input simultaneously.
It's fast. Yes. Latency scales linearly, but the slope of that line is very shallow. Prefill is incredibly fast, and crucially, because it's compute-bound matrix multiplication, it is very cheap.
So reading massive amounts of data is fast and cheap.
Yes. But then you transition to the decode phase. This is the output generation phase. When the model is actually generating the response, it must do so sequentially, token by token. It generates a single token, appends it to the KV cache, and runs the entire neural network again to predict the next token.
And because it has to load the model weights from memory for every single token, it becomes memory bandwidth bound, not compute bound.
Exactly. Therefore, the decode phase is incredibly slow, and it is exponentially more expensive. Generating one output token can be magnitudes more computationally expensive and time-consuming than processing one input token.
And this mathematical reality leads to the ultimate engineering hack of 2026. If prefill is cheap and fast and decode is expensive and slow, how do you optimize your agent? You write massive, heavily detailed, incredibly constrained prompts. You shove thousands of tokens of context, strict rules, repository maps, and few-shot examples into the input to force the model to output a tiny, hyper-concise JSON response.
You gladly trade a slight increase in cheap prefill time to achieve a massive reduction in expensive, slow decode time. It flips traditional API payload logic on its head.
It's brilliant. Long prompt, short output. Write that down. But there are other optimization tactics mentioned in the source that push into more advanced territory. Speculative decoding, for instance.
Speculative decoding is a fascinating hardware-level optimization. It essentially uses two models simultaneously. A very small, very fast draft model guesses the next several tokens rapidly. Then the massive, slow target model evaluates those guesses in parallel.
Oh, that's clever.
If the target model agrees with the draft model's probabilities, you accept all the drafted tokens at once. You are effectively bypassing the sequential bottleneck, doubling or tripling your generation speed without losing the intelligence and accuracy of the large model.
And then there's the architectural tactic of decoupling reasoning from execution. I love this one because it maps perfectly to standard web development.
Yes. In early naive agent designs, an agent would think, call a database API, wait for the response, think again, call a weather API, wait. It was strictly sequential. The optimization is to force the agent to generate an explicit, comprehensive execution plan first.
Plan first, act later.
The model outputs, I need to fetch user data, I need to fetch order history, and I need to fetch inventory. Once that plan is generated, the orchestration layer takes over and executes all three API calls concurrently, in batches.
You eliminate the sequential LLM round trips. It's exactly how you'd optimize a React front-end loading multiple endpoints. You promise? All that stuff.
It is the exact same concurrency principle applied to agentic reasoning.
Now, what about the cost of all this reasoning? Because we hear a lot of hype about patterns like reflection, where the agent constantly reviews, critiques, and rewrites its own work in a loop. Does that brute force reasoning actually scale in real-world enterprise environments?
The source data from the Iser Classic Framework benchmark is unequivocally clear on this. Brute force reasoning is a massive trap.
The Classic Framework evaluating cost? Latency, accuracy, stability, and security.
Mm-hmm.
What did the benchmark reveal about reflection specifically?
It revealed that using a pattern like reflection, where the model loops and critiques itself repeatedly to improve an answer, does technically increase accuracy, but only marginally. In their enterprise data set, it yielded about a 5.4% bump in task efficacy.
I mean, 5.4% isn't nothing. If you're trading stocks, that's massive.
It isn't bad until you look at the economics. That 5.4% accuracy bump resulted in a 1,551% increase in computational cost per task.
Oh my God, 15 times the cost for a 5% gain. You would literally bankrupt your startup's AWS credits in a week.
Precisely. And the latency goes through the roof, averaging over 12 seconds per task compared to 2 seconds for a base React model. The benchmark proves that instead of using brute force looping with a massive general purpose model, the actual enterprise solution is domain-specific specialization.
Domain-tuned, purpose-built agents.
Yes. Agents tuned specifically for a single, narrow domain, say IT ticket resolution or legal contract parsing, hit an industry-leading accuracy of 82.7% with a stability score of 72% at roughly 10 times lower cost than the brute force generalized methods.
Because they aren't trying to be a poet, a Python programmer, and a lawyer at the same time, they are deeply constrained to a specific schema. And if we look at where these massive enterprise systems are actually running, the sources provide a brief mapping of the cloud ecosystems. It's not just running on a laptop anymore.
The enterprise landscape is heavily dominated by the big three cloud providers, and each is offering a very specific architectural flavor tailored to different engineering priorities. AWS Bedrock, for example, is pushing their agent core architecture.
Right.
Their primary focus is on serverless execution, strict VPC isolation, and data privacy. It's the default choice for healthcare or financial institutions handling highly regulated data.
Then you have Azure AI Foundry, which is the Microsoft ecosystem. Their massive selling point is exclusive, deep integration with the OpenAI GPT-5.x family and their deep research capabilities, tying it natively into the Office 365 graph.
And finally, Google Vertex AI. Google's unique advantage is hardware. They are leveraging their custom Tensor Processing Units, or TPUs. If your engineering priority is massive, batch processing throughput, we're talking systems exceeding 10,000 requests per hour, where GPU memory bandwidth becomes the bottleneck, Vertex AI offers superior hardware acceleration designed specifically for those dense workloads.
So AWS for VPC privacy, Azure for OpenAI exclusivity, Google for raw TPU batching throughput. It's a fascinating ecosystem. And knowing how to route your workloads based on those hardware realities is what separates a senior architect from a junior dev.
Absolutely.
Okay, we have covered an absolutely massive amount of ground today. Let's summarize the architectural journey we just took. We started by defining the foundational four-layer stack: model APIs, protocols, frameworks, and harnesses. We navigated the bloated, confusing framework spectrum, contrasting the thin, transparent toolkits like Pydantic AI with the thick, opinionated orchestrators like LangGraph.
And we highlighted the severe fragmentation risks of framework lock-in with the whole AutoGen story.
Yes, the AutoGen disaster. We explored the uncomfortable truth that the most sophisticated coding harnesses in the world, the tools setting the standard bypass heavy frameworks almost entirely in favor of customized high-performance while loops.
We looked under the hood at the mechanics of context engineering, specifically how tools like Ader use tree-sitter ASTs and graph ranking algorithms to compress code-based context by 98%.
And finally, we grounded all of this theory in brutal production realities. The sandcastle problem of silent state failures, the absolute mathematical necessity of understanding prefill versus decode latency, and why brute force reasoning loops will completely bankrupt your infrastructure budget.
It is a comprehensive view of what separates an amateur prompt engineer from a true system architect in 2026.
And that is exactly the value we want you to take away from this deep dive. Understanding why you might skip unstructured React prompting in favor of strict JSON schema function calling. Knowing how to mathematically balance your token budget between prefill and decode. Understanding the operational danger of framework lock-in.
This is your ammunition.
Use this in your next print planning when your team is debating architecture. Use this in your next system design interview. Be the person in the room who understands the physics of the network and the mechanics of the inference engine, not just the marketing copy of the latest framework.
If we connect all these engineering realities to the bigger picture, there is a core metric mentioned deep in the text that we should really reflect on: the decision turn count.
Oh, right.
This measures how many autonomous decisions an agent makes before a human reviews its work.
Because right now, with a copilot-like cursor, the count is basically one. It suggests a diff, you review it. But with autonomous architectures, that count is scaling rapidly to 5, 10, 50 decisions.
Exactly. As standard protocols like MCP become universally adopted, and as the foundational models themselves begin to internalize that essential while loop natively within their own hardware architecture, it raises a profound question about the future of our daily workflow. Will the harnesses we rely on today, the cursors and the aiders, eventually become just as obsolete as the heavy frameworks we are currently moving away from?
That is a wild thought.
What happens to the role of the developer when that cognitive proximity, the absolute need for you to have your hands on the steering wheel reviewing every diff, drops to zero?
What happens when the blueprint isn't just redrawing itself, but the system is building the entire house, running the tests, and deploying to production without you even looking at the code? That is something to chew on.
Definitely.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Keep building, keep questioning the abstractions, and we will see you next time.